This is The Source on Texas Public Radio 89.1 FM. I'm David Martin Davies. Voters in the State Senate District 19 will be picking their representative starting Monday when early voting begins for the runoff of their special election. This sprawling district covers 17 counties. It stretches from San Antonio down to the border, over the West Texas, and reaches the New Mexico border. We invited both candidates on to talk about their plans for the district and for Texas. The Republican candidate, Pete Flores, declined. However, we keep the invitation open in case he changes his mind. Democrat Pete Gallego, though, accepted, and I spoke to him this morning. In the original special election in July 31st, you came in second. You didn't actually win that. It was Pete Flores, the Republican, had 34%, and you, Pete Gallego, Democrat, came in with 29%. So does that make you the underdog? Do you feel like you're the underdog?
Well, I always run like I'm the underdog, whether I'm the underdog or not. You run unopposed or you run scared. Frankly, the results were exactly as I had expected them to be. When you have two really active Democrats who are working really hard, it naturally splits the vote. And it's about a 60% Democratic district, I would think. And I ended up, you know, the split ended up about where I expected it to end up. So
because you were running with Gutierrez.
Right. I mean, Roland Gutierrez had been out there for a good while. He'd been working at it for 2 years. And I had gotten into the race essentially very late in the game. But, you know, I think Mr. Flores had the luxury of none of the other Republicans campaigning. They really didn't put a lot of money or effort into their races because Mr. Flores had that network. He'd run against the sitting senator in the last general election. So I wasn't surprised. I was very I felt really good about it. It turned out exactly as I had expected it to. And as you say, I mean, whether I'm the underdog or not, I will tell you that I'm certainly running as the underdog.
Representative Gutierrez, when y'all were running in that special election against each other, there was some sharp barbs going back and forth. Have y'all had any communication? Has he endorsed you? Or are y'all working together to make this a Democratic seat?
I think a lot of the people who supported Roland, the local politics were such that, I mean, they know us both, but at the end of the day, the local situation was such that they felt it necessary to help Roland, which is fine. I certainly understand the local political issue, and I will tell you that all of Roland's people, all of his support has now folded in behind me. I haven't really had any detailed conversations with Roland about endorsements or those kinds of things. I know the rest of the Bayer delegation has already endorsed me, but I think with Roland, I mean, you put your heart and soul into something, and I think it takes a while to make peace with it.
So we're having this special election and now runoff because of what former Senator Carlos Uresti did. He resigned after being found guilty of 11 felonies. He was sentenced to 12 years in prison. Do you think that that makes running as a Democrat more difficult? Former Senator Uresti was a Democrat. Did it damage the brand in the district?
I don't believe that. I think the Democratic brand is actually very strong. This is going to be a very good year, a very good November, certainly for Democratic candidates. I think Beto O'Rourke is a prime example of that. The crowds that he draws all over the 19th district are pretty amazing and very energetic and enthusiastic. So I don't think it's a brand issue. I think, frankly, there's also a pretty stark contrast between my style and Carlos Uresti's style, and I think people see that and they note the contrast. I tend to be much more low key, I think, than most other people, and so I don't feel like it's a brand issue. I think what happened to Carlos was essentially personal to Carlos. I think the voters look beyond that and they're looking for a new start, and that's essentially what I offer.
Senator Uresti had made his bones in the Texas Senate as a watchdog for foster care in Texas and also elder care as well. Is that something that you think we need to make sure continues?
Absolutely. I think those are critical. Those are absolutely critical issues. There's really No obligations more important than taking care of our seniors and taking care of our veterans. Those are the two communities that I think are, for me, part of the cornerstone of the campaign. And in addition to that, you know, as a parent, how can you not believe in the future of our kids? How can you not want to protect them? How can you not want to make sure that every kid, regardless, has an opportunity to fully live out their maximum potential? And I hope to be able to do that in the Texas Senate, to be part of that.
In this race, in the runoff, the Republican Party of Texas has been trying to make an issue of where you reside. They say that you do not live within District 19, that you live in Austin, actually, and they have gone to court trying to get you off of the ballot, and also now they have gone to the FBI looking for an investigation and whether or not you falsified information on a federal loan for the home that you and your wife own in Austin. Your reaction?
I will tell you, the Republican Party says a lot of things, and I don't put a lot of stock in it. They've been, you know, frankly, it's such a hardcore Democratic district that they're, you know, desperate people, desperate measures. And for me, it's pretty basic. I mean, I live in Alpine. I vote in Alpine. My license plate says Alpine. My vehicle is registered in Alpine. I mean, there's no, but look, you got to say something. And when you're, you know, my experience in politics has been that nobody ever runs against you by saying nice things about you. They have to find something to attack. And I think that's what you're watching. And, you know, to some extent, I have to say I'm flattered by the attention, because one of the things that my dad told me years ago, which I have found to be true, is that nobody tries to tackle you unless they think you have the ball. So I think the Republican Party knows I have the ball, and they're doing their best to tackle me. And part of that is some fairly wild and crazy allegations. And, you know, this seems to be, certainly the last couple of years have seemed to be the time for wild and crazy things in politics.
So let me follow up and ask you, where are you going to sleep tonight?
Well, I'm actually staying in San Antonio tonight.
Where do you hang your hat? I mean, where do you call home?
Oh, well, no, home is Alpine for me. But Alpine is also, you know, 400 miles, so I'm not going to sleep in my own bed tonight. I tend to wander around between, when I'm in San Antonio, I stay at different people's homes. I have developed a lot of friendships over my not only my years in the legislature, but my term in Congress. A lot of friends in San Antonio, went to school with a lot of the lawyers and judges in San Antonio. So I don't lack for places to camp out. But I spend a lot of time in San Antonio because this is where the people are. It's where was the lion's share of the congressional district I represented. Certainly, it's the lion's share of the Senate district. And so I tend to spend a lot of time here in San Antonio. From my perspective, you move around a lot. I mean, you know, people have jobs where they have to wander around, and you have to travel. And for me, that's always been the case. I love Alpine, and Alpine is home. But, you know, there's not a lot of legal cases happening in Alpine. There's not a lot of other it's a quiet community. And so I go home and I relax. But the truth is that if I want to meet a lot of other people, if I want to campaign, if I want to find additional legal clients or do any of those kinds of things, that's not going to be in Alpine. That's going to be somewhere else. So I spend a lot of time on the road, and that's not anything new. That's been I'm not doing anything differently today that I haven't done really in the last 20 years.
This is The Source on Texas Public Radio. I'm talking with Democratic candidate for State Senate District 19. Early voting starts on Monday. Later in the hour, we will hear about the approved plans for Alamo Plaza, and those phones will be open. We're going to take a quick break, and we'll be right back. Welcome back to The Source on Texas Public Radio. I'm David Martin Davies. Back to the interview with Pete Gallego, Democrat running in the special election runoff for Senate District 19. We're talking to you, Pete Gallego, Democrat running in the special election for Senate District 19, and not your opponent, Pete Flores. We invited Pete Flores to come on multiple times. We made lots of different arrangements to see if he would come on and talk to the voters. He declined, completely declined. I just want to make that clear that there was an invitation, and there remains an invitation. If he wants to come on, you know, later, we'll get him on. But why are you here?
I take every advantage of opportunities to talk to people, to get to know the audiences around the district and to have the audiences get to know me. I think it's important that, you know, a lot of times we think every political person has two horns and a tail, and I want people to realize that I don't have two horns and a tail. I'm actually a normal everyday person like everybody else is. But I'm here because I want to be. I think this is important. I think it's important for people to get to know my views. I think it's important for me to answer questions. I think it's important for me to essentially have the opportunity to for the audience, for the voters, to get to know me better. And every opportunity that I have to do that, I try to take advantage.
Your opponent, Pete Flores, continues to try to characterize you as a professional politician, and that his advantage to voters, he's trying to make his appeal to potential voters, is that he's not a professional politician. He's been a game warden. So let's talk about that contrast. I mean, you have been you worked in the Texas House for that area in West Texas for many, many years, and then you ran and you represented that area, West Texas, in the U.S. Congress. So you have a lot of experience representing and knowing the issues of that area.
I do have a lot of experience working on issues like public school finance, working on issues like our tax system, working on issues like the state budget. All of those kinds of things, I think, are going to come in very handy in the Texas Senate. I will tell you that I kind of smile and laugh at some of the things that Pete has said. First of all, I will tell you that I've known Pete for 20 years or more. In the legislature for over 10 years, I was the guy who was primarily responsible for the law enforcement budget in the state on the House side. And because Pete was over at Parks and Wildlife, I did his budget. And so I got to know him fairly well. But I will tell you that from where Pete started in the Game Warden service, and he worked his way up at Parks and Wildlife, that's politics, right? He was working to get a promotion. He was working all the way. Pete is as political as any person I know. So for him to accuse me of being more political than he is, I kind of smile, because those state agencies are pretty political animals. State government tends to be pretty political, and Pete is as political, if not more so.
Yeah, but there's office politics, and then there's professional politics of understanding how bills get passed in Austin and how they don't get passed, how monkey wrenches can be thrown around.
For me, there's a difference, and here's the difference. The experience matters, right? Knowing how to object to a bill, knowing how to kill a bill, knowing how to be an advocate for the people that you serve, all of that, I think, is, I consider that job training. I don't think that Pete Flores has the job training to do what he aspires to do in the Texas Senate. I think I have that job training. But in terms of when I think of politics, I mean, politics has such a negative connotation these days, that word. And the truth is, there's politics in everything that we do for everybody every day. But in terms of the job training and the job experience, I clearly have more than Pete Flores does.
And that's something that would appeal to a voter?
I would think that would appeal to a voter. I think you're seeing in a lot of places what happens when you hire. I mean, look, if you want to hire a lawyer, you want to hire a good lawyer who knows what he's doing. If you want to go to an MD, you want to go to an MD who's a good MD, who knows what they're doing and who has that experience, right? You really don't want to wake up and find out that you're the first person that person has ever worked on. So I see this as much the same thing. I mean, I'm probably more equipped to talk about issues like school finance and those other things. And I think there's a reason that Pete and I have not had any joint appearances. I think my level of experience enables me to talk about a lot of more detail on a lot more things than Pete Flotis does.
So let's talk about school finance. That's an issue that's going to be coming up in the upcoming legislative session. If you win the runoff, you will be taking part in the upcoming legislative session. Not a lot of time for training for someone who has never done this type of work before. And school finance is going to be a big issue in trying to figure out how we can get schools paid for, how we can have quality education in the state of Texas, and how we can also deal with some of the issues of property taxes.
Right. I will tell you, I can hit the ground running on the first day because of my experiences and, frankly, my relationships over there. I know many of the members, but here, you know, one of the things that frustrates me is, why don't we ever set a goal of having Texas as the best education in the country, as having our public school system be the best? Why don't we ever say we want our kids to have a world-class public education here in Texas? I don't see candidates, I don't see elected officials talking about making our schools world-class. I would like to see that. I get frustrated because, frankly, I mean, I grew up in Alpine, and there wasn't, you weren't taught to dream in those days. You weren't taught to do the kinds of things. You know, you were taught that you could do what your parents did. If your father was the custodian, you were going to be the custodian. If your father was a mechanic, you were going to be a mechanic. And I want to see kids maximize their potential. And what does that take? It takes an attitude change. You know, there was a point in time when the legislature was a full partner with local public school districts in educating our kids. And the state paid 48% of the cost of public education. Now, the state is at about 37 or 38% of the cost of public education. But it costs more to educate a kid these days. I mean, the cost of electricity, the cost of gasoline for school buses, we've got more kids in the public schools of the state than we've ever had. And the state's share is dropping. And so if the state share drops and the cost of education is going up, well, who pays for that? Well, the local school district has to pay for that. Well, and how do they pay for that? Well, their only option is through their local property tax. That's how they raise revenue. So the truth is the state has a lot more revenue options than the local school district does. If you want to lower property taxes, then the state needs to fully fund public education. It's got to step up to the plate, and it's got to prioritize public ed. I don't see the state doing that.
Uh-oh. But the district that you want to represent has particular challenges because these are, many of them are rural school mm-hmm. districts. Some of them are experiencing depopulation. Mm-hmm. They're trying to figure out how can we give our kids here now quality education when the roofs are leaking, buses are breaking down, books are out of date. These are school districts that are hurting, that are in this district.
That's absolutely true. That's absolutely true. And we have a school finance system that now it determines that those school districts that are hurting are actually, the irony is that many of them are now classified as wealthy school districts. They're what's known as Chapter 41 districts, especially the small ones, because the argument is that you have, you know, if you've got Balmoray High School with, you know.
And then we got, you know, oil production there.
And you've got a small district, and the state says no, you don't have enough kids. You have this opportunity to generate all this money. So the state takes the money away from those school districts, right? And many times it doesn't really leave enough for the local district to operate on well, and for them to take care of their local kids. So that's clearly a problem.
So is this the advantage we're seeing of someone who really knows the district and knows almost each and every school district very personally and can identify which, you know, the certain issues for each district?
I think there's every community is different. And I've had the opportunity to go to places like, you know, Balmoray, to go to places, Reeves County. That school district is Pecos Barstow Toya, one of the which serves Pecos, right? But most people wouldn't be able to tell you about Barstow or Toya. They wouldn't know that those existed. They would just think about Pecos. They wouldn't be able to tell you about, oh, what's going on in Marathon, Texas, or Sanderson, or when you do this, how does this affect Comstock? How does this affect Sabinal? How does this affect, for me, those are the things that I think about. I love coming to San Antonio, and San Antonio, as I said, is the biggest city for me, and it's definitely where the majority of the people are, and a lot of my attention is focused on San Antonio. But I also know the minutiae of the district very well. What makes it tick? What makes it run? What makes the economy not only in San Antonio, but in the rural areas? And I think that's one of the things that sets me apart is that I have those deep roots in those small towns. But
there are also stressed school districts in San Antonio that are going to be in that are in that district.
You look at what's going on, the competition for dollars. That's going on, for example, you pick up the newspaper here any day and you'll probably see an article about the competition between the charter school movement, for example, and the public schools, and how the public schools are having to lay off teachers and how the public schools are having to, cut their budgets and how the public schools are having all of these issues. You've had tax elections, you've had different things. So this is a big issue everywhere. It's and I don't care where you live, your kid is entitled to the best public education that our state can provide, and I think your school district has every right to expect as much state assistance as they can get.
This race, though, is a special election. Early voting starts on Monday. There's so much chaos happening right now. It's really hard to get stories out to people to understand what's going on here and go out and vote. This is really about getting your people out to vote versus Pete Flores is getting his Republican supporters out to vote.
I think this is exactly what you'd call a turnout race. You know who voted the first round. You had about 26,000 people or so turn out for the first round. You want to get those people to come back in the runoff, and you want to build on that. So Mr. Flores knows who the Republicans are, who the voters are with Republican voter history that voted in the first round. He wants to get them back, and he wants to build on that. I know who the Democratic voters were in the first round. I want to get them back, and I want to build on that. And so, to the extent that you can, you certainly want to bring new voters in, and you want to that's how you build. But the truth is that we pretty much know who our targets are in this race. It makes it very different from a general election in November where you want every single soul out there. This is a more targeted effort. And it's also very confusing to people because people, and I think this was deliberate. I want to be clear that this was a deliberate thing on the governor's part. But people are focused on November. You see the political ads saying, vote for this candidate, vote for that candidate. And those are November races. And so for Mr. Flores and I, this race is in September, and people aren't used to voting in a September race. They're not used to a September race at all. And so the expectation is that this turnout will be lower in September than in November, which is clearly, I think, what's going to happen. But I expect that we'll be able to get more Democrats out. I think it's the stepping stone for November, and we're certainly working really hard at building that turnout.
Pete Gallego is the Democrat running in the special election runoff for State Senate District 19. The Republican in the race is Pete Flores. He declined her invitation to come on the air. Early voting starts on Monday. When we come back from the break, we get the latest on the plan for Alamo Plaza, and you can call in with your questions and comments. The Source continues after this.